Hi there, Megan Thompson here with Megan Thompson Coaching, and today we are going to cover sports and your sensitive kids. So if spring sports are creating some challenges for you, if you're wondering whether or not your child should be in the team sports that you signed them up for, or you're trying to figure out how to help your child demonstrate good sportsmanship, then today's show is for you. Let's do it. Hello, and welcome to How to Parent Your Highly Sensitive Child Like a Ninja. I'm your host, Megan Thompson, licensed clinical professional counselor and registered play therapist supervisor. We at MTC teach parents how to eliminate the daily meltdown and shutdown cycle for your sensitive children and teens. Highly sensitive children make up 15 to 20% of the population, according to research that has been gathered for over a century. And this podcast answers one question: how can you raise emotionally intelligent children, stop walking on eggshells, and help your child express their needs safely without punishments, yelling, or coddling? If you want to know the answer, you're in the right place. Here we have a great topic to focus on: teaching your child resilience, helping your child experience challenge. So if you're working with your child on helping them build collaboration skills, effective coping skills, problem-solving skills, it could be important for you to sign them up for sports or any sort of extracurricular activity. We're going to speak specifically about sports today because it is springtime. And this is a topic that we hear seasonally. So let's talk about it. You might be wondering whether or not your child can tolerate staying in the game and whether or not you should keep having, you know, asking your child to go and signing them up for these activities if they can't handle it. Now, when I say handle it, I mean if your family is stuck in the meltdown cycle where your sensitive child is hitting, kicking, screaming, yelling, throwing things, refusing to get out the door, saying that they don't want to go, that they're not good at the sport, anything related to the transition, causing some sort of explosion, or internal experience that is implosive. I'm the worst. Nobody likes me. The team will be better off without me. Everything will be better off without me. I want a different family. I hate you. You don't love me. All of these internal self-deprecating statements coming out to you, then it is time to listen up. Because here at MTC, we help parents of highly sensitive kids eliminate that daily shutdown, meltdown, refusal trajectory that they're on. And we take the angle that you are the parent and you are the therapeutic change agent for your child, because there are hundreds of research studies to back up the process that we have used with hundreds of families. And so now that even more research is coming on to the scene, demonstrating that there's a genetic component to highly sensitive kids, that this temperament trait that was designed and determined, in research starting in the 1920s actually can be found at the gene level, a combination of thousands of genes, and more specifically, some genes labeled plasticity genes are more often highlighted in highly sensitive people. And so as the research continues to over and over and over again point in the direction that some children are born sensitive and that there's nothing wrong with them, it is so important for you to make that assumption. There's nothing wrong with your child. If they're having these daily meltdowns, that means that they have a skill gap. And so when we teach our clients this, they stop believing that their child is a project. They stop trying to raise their child as if they are broken and that's something that needs to be fixed. And quite frankly, as a parent, that's incredibly relieving. And what happens in that dynamic, right, is that your child starts to feel less pressure coming from you. And as a result, the rising tide lifts all ships in the family home, right? Because, you know, we've heard this adage, you can cut the tension with a knife, right? That means that if you're the one exuding tension, we got to fix this right now. There's something going on with you. You don't make any sense. I don't understand this. What's wrong? Then your child feels that from you. Your child is going to hear
this in the words behind your words. They will read between the lines and they will experience that self-doubt and internalize it when you are conveying confusion around your child's behavior. And so as a parent of a sensitive kid, it is incredibly important that you educate yourself, which is why you're listening to today's show. And I really hope that you're able to listen to more than just one and solving the problem that is the family dynamic meltdown cycle. And I call it the compassionate meltdown cycle, because if you're working on parenting your child without all of the yelling and threats and external motivation like bribery or allowances or removal of privileges that were completely unrelated to the child's behavior like you were raised, or, you know, spanking or any other much more harsh experiences for you, and even abusive experiences if that was happening for you in your childhood, then you know what it takes to really turn this around and to avoid what you're, how you were raised. And yet, if you're still stuck, this can be really disheartening. So as a parent, I just want to send love and compassion to you and validate the fact that if you're stuck, it doesn't mean that you're a horrible person. It doesn't mean that you're never going to figure this out. It does mean you need a much more effective and efficient process so you can focus on thriving. And so while we're focusing on this one piece here related to your kids' sports, I want to really dive in to some of the symptoms of the meltdown cycle that you might be seeing when your child is engaging in sports. And then we're going to talk about the one simple phrase that you need to keep in mind when you're working with your child to solve this problem. So what is the problem, right? Let's make sure that we're all talking about the same thing today. So when your child is struggling to participate in sports, you might see this meltdown or the intense refusal or any of the above or all of the above behaviors that I already mentioned. And this might be happening only at home, right? You might see this as a challenge when your child is transitioning to practice or to the games, or the night before when you mention the games are coming up. Any way, shape, or form, your child is concerned with either their performance or concerned with having to play at all. And this leads to a big old explosion or implosion, right? So we've got a transition issue. The other thing to pay attention to is whether or not your child is struggling with the type of sport, including the environment that they're being asked to play in. So court sports means that there's loud noises and likely echo, right? Same as indoor swimming, big echo going on in there, right? And so one thing that I know parents often ask me is, you know, Megan, should we wonder, you know, if my child is only capable of engaging in individual sports? Maybe we should just sign them up for track because they're having massive meltdowns and just about to throw the bat on the baseball field, right? And this is a big challenge because there's embarrassment involved, right? You're feeling embarrassed because your child is having a meltdown or maybe even a tantrum on the field because things aren't working the way they want them to. And then in addition to that, they're maybe even a poor sport, not able to give the high fives at the end of the game and experiencing big, intense emotions to even get up to bat or any sort of action that it takes to participate in these sports. And I got to tell you that it's not the team versus individual sport debate here that we're really talking about. I totally get why you might be thinking that that is the cause, that your child can't tolerate team sports. And my question to you is, okay, if not now, then when, right? Because when we're talking about raising a sensitive child who's resilient, you want them to be able to tolerate all collaboration, as long as the collaboration is psychologically safe, right? So team sports requires collaboration. Now, if your child isn't effective at the sport itself, like the technical skills, and that part is frustrating to them, for example, the gross motor skills required in playing a certain sport or the fine motor skills required in playing a certain sport, and you know, maybe they're just not very fast like myself. I get it. Like, I totally get choosing a different sport for your kid as an option if they're not enjoying themselves because of their skill set, and that might not be a skill set that they're able to grow as swiftly as their peers, right? And so what I want to make sure that we're covering here is the difference between looking at the physical capacity for your child compared to the emotional capacity for your child, right? So I had a very low physical capacity for baseball when I was younger and growing up, and I tried out. It was like the thing to do, and it was a co-ed team. I was trying out. Actually, you know what? I was trying out for softball, which was not a co-ed team. This is my memory back in the 90s. And my hand-eye coordination, guys, is not stellar in terms of athleticism. So what happened was 2 years in a row, I ended up with a crazy bloody nose because it took a pop fly to the face. And the first year, I made the co-ed baseball team instead of the female softball team I was trying out for, right? And this is like town rec. So it's a small opportunity. Not everybody made the team. They said, hey, you can go play on this team. All right, sounds good. Now, also in terms of athleticism, speed is not a skill set of mine. So baseball didn't really work out. It was difficult for me to hit, and it was difficult for me to get to the base on time. So, you know, I can show you a Zumba number and memorize those steps in 1.5 repetitions, and we're good to go. I have skill sets in other athletic avenues, and I was pretty good at butterfly on the swim team growing up, but baseball was just not my thing. So I totally understand the importance of helping your child find their strengths. And this is something that is true for non-sensitive kids and sensitive kids alike, right? So helping your child find interests in extracurricular activities to include sports and allowing them to thrive, building some skill sets in cross training if they are super athletic and they could take it somewhere. You have that avenue. In addition, you could use sports as exposure for skills like resilience and team collaboration and problem solving and physical exercise, right? So we want to look at the value of why you're sending your kid up for team sports or individual sports. And there are different values that can be imparted for either sport and also for both, right? You can fit both of those needs in both individual and team sports for the most part, right? Because even things like gymnastics, require team collaboration. Dance requires choreography, which is a team sport, right? So when we're thinking about serving your child in some of these more competitive angles of team sports, where there's a winner and a loser every time, in for example baseball, this adds pressure to the experience for your sensitive child. And if your child is not able to transition to go to the thing in the first place, aside from determining that they truly have a very hard time demonstrating the skill and they truly don't have a lot of capability and therefore you could decide to scrap it because it was a nice try and they can learn something else they can thrive at, great, because you and me both can agree, I'm sure, that not everybody needs to be a world-class baseball player, right? A second time around, I caught that pop fly to the face and I said to my mom, you know what? I don't want to play. And she was like, okay, second season, we're not going to make you play. Now, again, when I use the word make you, this was the 90s. So we had a lot more traditional parenting going on back then. And my parents did make me play the first year. And that wasn't necessarily with threats all the time, but there was definitely traditional focused parenting, which includes fear-based parenting. And so it wasn't an option for me to have a choice because of the other ways that my parents used discipline, as many of our boomer parents did, right? And if your parents are beyond boomer age or Gen X, whatever, it doesn't matter. What I'm getting at is that the traditional, I would never talk to my parent like that, or I would never refuse to do something my parent signed me up. Well, yeah, of course you wouldn't, because your parent used threats and your parent used raised voices and they used potentially corporal punishment and spanking and all other fear-inducing tactics to get your compliance. And so when there were more neutral conversations happening, you did not have the mental option to actually say what you truly felt, right? And have that be honored, unless your parent was willing to have a conversation with you and was willing to consider your opinion as valid, right? Which in traditional parenting, that's a hit or miss. I mean, it took a solid extra season and another bloody nose for my family to be like, okay, that's a valid concern. I was not very good at it the first season. So, and I might've even played two, if you will, and maybe the third time was the kicker where my concern was taken seriously. I can't remember. It doesn't matter. I'm using this personal anecdote really to tell you, I totally get where you're coming from. If you're thinking that you learned lessons like persistence and resiliency through these experiences of sports, then that could very well be a value of yours. And it's also true. We don't have to force our kids to participate in these activities to create the necessary grit that is important for being resilient and being successful in life, because successful people demonstrate grit. This is not the only avenue you can teach grit to your kid, okay? So one of the things that we teach our clients is how to stay out of extremes. You absolutely need to stay out of extremes in parenting a kid who can fall into extremes where their highs are super high, which means they might go off the deep end in terms of that intense, energy, really intense, which can lead to a meltdown, or their lows are really low, which is meltdown behavior or self-deprecating statements, right? And leading to meltdowns. And so when we're looking at helping our children stay out of that extreme angle, we as parents have to stay out of that as well. So when we coach our clients to do that, you have to be able to think outside of your own box, teach grit, teach resilience, build those skills, build creative problem solving, build collaboration outside of the sport mentality. And the truth of the matter is your child learns social skills through you. Children are taught social skills through their parents. It is a very misguided perception that children learn social skills through other children. They get exposure to people with being around other kids, but they learn how to treat people based on how their parents treat them, all right? So in that dynamic, and this is true for non-sensitive kids and sensitive kids, but specifically because this is my show, we're talking about raising your highly sensitive child like a ninja. Your job is to be stealthy, to be pointed, to be tactful, to think outside the box, and also to see your opportunities where others might see them as challenges and walk away so that you can reach your outcomes and teach your child to do the very same. And when we're thinking about it from that angle, it is important to understand that, sure, team sports aren't the only way to teach resiliency. And it's also true that if you're trying to pull your kid from team sports because you're thinking that the team's your kid can't tolerate it, then that is an enabling perception. It is passive parenting. It is going to be ineffective, and it is not going to teach resiliency, right? So without a plan, you're giving your power away as a parent to the circumstance of the sport. And so when we coach parents, we help them identify angles, assess the situation. Obviously, if the coach is verbally abusive or just, you know, not a good leader, then that adds to the equation, right? But we're talking all systems go in terms of a positive experience and your kid just can't handle it. And it's important to understand it's either related to the transitions or it's related to your child's overstimulation and overwhelm related to the struggle in going to sports and in this particular avenue with the team environment, etc. And then the other one is that your child can't handle losing, right? So you might be wondering, how do I teach my kid to be a good sport if they're throwing the bat, they're freaking out, they're mean mugging the other team, they're having a really hard time, or on the flip side, they're showing up so perfectionistic and hard on themselves because of their competitive nature that they just can't actually do it, and they're stuck in analysis paralysis and freeze mode, which is that other side of the same coin. phrase I want you to take away from today's call, or sorry, I say a call because this is what I teach my clients, but from today's show is dysregulation is dysregulation is dysregulation is dysregulation. I'm going to say it again. We say this all the time with our clients. Dysregulation is dysregulation is dysregulation is dysregulation. Honest to goodness, for highly sensitive kids, it does not matter what the immediate catalyst is. That is not the cause. Right? It is the straw that's breaking the camel's back on any given day, on any given week, in any given pattern. When your child is struggling with these issues, your sensitive kid is not freaking out because baseball ain't their thing. Because baseball ain't their thing doesn't mean that freak out is on the table. If they have emotion management skills and they know how to collaborate and communicate with you, they trust themselves to be able to do that, even if they're initially hearing no, that they can speak their mind effectively, they will be heard, they trust that they will be heard, and that they can have a back and forth circular conversation, not circular like cyclical, but circular as in I give something to you, you give something to me, and we go back and forth here. And that returned conversation skill set is something that they feel confident in. Now, if your child is a master debater or a master negotiator to the point where they never accept no for an answer, that's not effective communication skills, right? Because even attorneys need to be able to accept no for an answer and respond to the judge who's saying, you know, order in the court or sustained or what is the other statement. I'm not an attorney, but I watched enough Law and Order growing up to like remember some of these things, right? And so what we're talking about is that within boundaries, persistence is necessary for success, and your child needs the capacity to accept no for an answer and either tolerate that no emotionally enough to do the thing anyways or communicate in a more effective way why it is that they feel like they can't do a thing. Right? That is true in sports. That is true in academics. That is true related to their relationship with their siblings or their relationship with you or their fears at bedtime or whatever it is that is the behavior of the week. So I encourage you to stay out of crisis of the week coaching. This is a mentality that is a symptom of the meltdown cycle where you're looking at this week's issue that you're having with your kid, the argumentative issue, as the problem that is supposed to be fixed. We just spoke about this with our clients this week. If you are struggling with this focus, then you need to move upstream. The goal is not to solve problems by picking sports and making sure you get it right. The goal is that your child feels capable of tolerating discomfort and moves through that discomfort and follows through on their word or follows through on asking for what they need to the point where you really understand how hard it is for them. You can collaborate with them to meet the same value you need in a different avenue, right? Because a creative problem solver, as an 8-year-old, can say, you know, could say, Mom, I don't really like playing baseball. I the bat feels heavy and I don't think I'm good at it. And it frustrates me because it hurts my shoulders and I'm not very fast and I don't like that either. And you say, okay, well, I really want you to learn persistence and that it's okay to fail. Right? And your 8-year-old says, all right, well, Mom, I'm learning that in karate, right? Like, I don't know. Maybe they're signed up for a second thing. And then they say, well, I learned that in this avenue. Can I just learn that there? And you look at your kid and you notice how insightful they are and you recognize that they're self-aware because highly sensitive kids are more apt to be self-aware and insightful when they're regulated. And they perform above their peers in every avenue of life when they have these skills and they're not being parented in a reactive or meltdown cycle manner, then you get to say, holy smoly, my 8-year-old is having, you know, 14-year-old intellectual conversations here. This is what we're talking about, right? So highly sensitive kids who are not having meltdowns, who are not losing it internally or externally, imploding, right, or exploding, having very wise conversations, very wise conversations. Now, my daughter gave me coffee at the time of this recording, and she said it's St. Patrick's Day, and she decorated my cup, right? And she said, "Mom, did you see?" And she wrote on this on the decoration, "I love you." And she brought it down. She said, "I wanted to decorate it for you." And I said, "Oh, this is very kind of you." And she said something else, and I forget what it was. And I said, "Oh, you're very compassionate." And she's hugging me at this point because I hugged her. And she said, "Well, that touched my soul." And she teared up a little bit. Guys, this is what we're talking about. We're talking about insightful, communicative, deep connection with your children. And this is something I know that you have seen sprinkles of. You've seen sparks of with your kiddo. Your child is in there. They're in there, and they can be there. They can be shining in your life, in sports, in whatever it is, right? In all kinds of avenues if you have this skill set that you're missing. I do it in my home. You know, we're not hypocritical over here. I use the same skills that I teach my clients, and I didn't develop them by experimenting on my kid. I had a kid after I knew all these skills and was already teaching them, which I think is different than a lot of the other professionals who are touting their process. They might even have letters after their name or whatever, but they figured it out with their kids, and now they're engaging with other parents. And I think it's important to understand that our team, our process, you know, we've been doing this for a lot longer than that. You know, my child is 7.5, and I've had this expertise for a lot longer than 7.5 years. And so in terms of communicating that skill set that is so, so critical, you know, we see this from my kiddo. And then she says to me, we come home from gymnastics, and you guys might have heard some little gymnastics anecdotes this year. It's a different setup, and it's a different dynamic. And she mentioned to me again, she says, "Mom, the adults who run this class, I really like it, but they use threats with us." And I said, "Oh, okay. Tell me more about that." And she said, "Well, yeah, they say before we even get a chance, if you don't get out of the ball pit," it's like one of those foam pits, "if you don't get out of the pit, there won't be a lollipop." And she said, "You know, they're not really letting us be kids. It takes us a minute to talk to each other, and we're doing it, but they don't really give us a minute. They just use the threat." And obviously, at 7.5, that conversation is a clear indicator that she and I have not have had this conversation before. Observations about how children learn, observations about what I teach my clients, right? Observations about what we do in our household compared to what other people might do in their households when she's come in contact, in addition to some of the things that I've shared with her regarding punishments and how punishments don't teach, and because there's books that she reads, and in terms of her reading comprehension and her understanding, she's hearing about, you know, these sixth grade stories and things like that, where kids are getting grounded by their parents, and it's just part of the everyday consumption of media that she engages in, which for my kid, that's audiobooks and chapter books and things like that. And it's just part of what she is digesting, right? And she's like, "Well, how come you've never grounded me?" And so we've had these lovely intellectual and thought-provoking conversations around how those skills actually don't work and things like that, right? And, you know, she brings it up occasionally and we discuss it. And then she discusses with me on the ride home. There's no refusal to go to gymnastics. If we're late, it's my fault because I'm not getting out the door fast enough. It's not because of her or any need for transition, right? She's tolerating adults not having skills at the capacity that we would wish or hope that they would, to not use external motivators, but instead use internal motivation. Like, let's, you know, we're moving to the next thing, and the child is like, "Okay, I want to do the next thing. Let's go," right? And so when you have a sensitive kid who understands at a deep level what makes people tick and wants to learn more about that, can learn more about themselves, can be insightful, then they can have these excellent conversations with you. They can advocate for their needs. They can tell you, hey, you know what? This class is an hour a week. I don't really need to have a conversation with the teacher because I'm probably not going to see them again, which is the conversation that we've, you know, she and I have had. Do you want to advocate with this teacher about this skill set or not? And some of those teachers, they're teens, right? This is their high school job. It's just what they know, right? So part of it is picking your battles and teaching my 7.5-year-old that she can choose to pick her battles because she's not walking away head like hung low, feeling like she's being, beat down emotionally by this coach because she's enjoying herself for the majority of the class. And those warnings and empty threats and things like that, she's able to let them roll off her back like water on a duck's back. Now, I don't always share stories about my daughter because she's not my anecdote for knowing that I can solve this problem. We share some client stories and you have plenty of resources to see the near 100 anecdotes on our results page, as well as other third-party reviews, etc. And it's also true to understand the process. Sometimes stories can really help you notice what's possible, because when I talk to families on breakthrough calls, I hear things like, you know, I would just be happy if we could have a peaceful dinner. And I got to be honest with you guys, if this is your hope, like that's the hope you're hanging on to, you've lost sight of what's possible for your family. And it's time. It is time. Yesterday was the day for you to start really prioritizing this, because what happens in dealing with the meltdown cycle over and over and over again for years is that the experience wears on you and you stop feeling like it's Chinese water torture. Stop noticing it, right? That drip, 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 drip. But when you have a constant leak, even on concrete, if I'm correct, correct me if I'm wrong, if you work in, you know, architecture or construction or whatever, but I'm pretty sure constant dripping even on concrete degrades the surface, right? So it doesn't matter to me how strong you believe yourself to be and how mentally resilient you are in other avenues of your life. If your response to what do you want for your family right now in the next 2, 3, 6 months, if the answer to that is something other than the world thriving, joy, excitement, spontaneity, and instead moves into, well, I'd just be happy if we can just keep it together for a dinner time. It's time. It is time to get on the phone with us, because you have been working at this for so long that you have changed your standards for your family. And I know, and you know, that that's just not simply how you started this thing. So let's go ahead and solve it. All right. Now, I'm not sure that our process will work for you. We have to have a conversation. You got to talk to either me or a member of my team. So happy to talk to you about whether or not our process would work. Clearly, it's not just about the sports. If your kiddo is struggling and having meltdowns or implosions over the age of 4. So let's get after it, folks. Talk to you soon. Looking forward to that conversation. Bye now.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of How to Parent Your Highly Sensitive Child Like a Ninja. We release a brand new episode every week, so be sure to click subscribe. If you like what you've heard and you're interested in seeing if you're a fit to work with us at MTC, here's what I want you to do next. Head on over to meganthompsoncoaching.com/call and book an appointment with our team. We'll get on the phone for about 60 minutes and we'll get you clarity on where you're stuck in parenting your sensitive child or teen, what your goals are for supporting your child's development. And if we can help you, we'll get you started on knowing exactly what to do to eliminate that meltdown cycle. Eliminating the daily meltdown cycle does not happen by itself. You need expert guidance to make it happen. And we've helped hundreds of clients from all over the world end that cycle in as little as 8 weeks. So to see if we can help you do the same, head on over to meganthompsoncoaching.com/call. I'm Megan Thompson, and we look forward to speaking to you soon.